scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, the left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yale, a shot. Save made by Al Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, let's get things going this hour. It is Monday, March 18th. We're coming at you from the Scotiabank Saddle Dome and the Hot Stove Lounge. And we're underway on this hour on Flames Talk. Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson of Post Media this week. Hello, Wes.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. We got a light week. Just the one game in week and two games overall.
That's where you're wrong. It's never a light week with me and you, Pat. We're going to come up with something to talk about.
Always heavy. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Yeah, Hot Stove Lounge is where we are on this Monday. The Flames don't play again. They'll play Monday night against the Washington Capitals, and not again until Saturday. That's kind of their last chance to breathe, and then it is a full bore the rest of the way. They'll play Vancouver and Buffalo back-to-back this weekend, then they're on the road, then they're back home, and it just kind of goes full bore until the end of the season. So this is the final light week of the season for the Calgary Flames as they're into their stretch drive, and as they kick off this light week, it has not been a light workload for goaltender Dustin Wolf, and that's how we're going to kick off this hour going inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. It's that time to stock up for the celebrations that matter with ingredients that help make memories. Visit Calgary Co-op where life's in store. Let's talk Dustin Wolf. He's turned into quite the story here in the final quarter of the season. He'll get his third straight start Monday against the Caps. Has been great in his last two. Wins over Vegas and then Montreal on Thursday and Saturday. He has stopped 64 of 67 shots, which is good for a .955 save percentage in those last two games. And it's a no-brainer starting first time in Dustin Wolf's NHL career when I came to the rink on Monday morning for a 9:30 morning skate. And when I got here, I had no doubts who the starting goaltender was going to be. Jacob Markstrom didn't practice on Sunday, so I just came to the rink knowing that, yeah, there's no way they're going against Dustin Wolf. There's no way they're going away from him because he's played so well the last two games, and he's been one of the biggest reasons they've won the last two games.
Yeah, absolutely. You can kind of strip away the fact that Dustin Wolf is the prized prospect for this organization, that, you know, he's considered the goaltender of the future. Dustin Wolf is not getting these starts because of anything looking ahead. Dustin Wolf is getting these starts because he's earned them, right? The way he played Thursday, I was saying to someone this morning, we could be having a very different conversation about the past two games if he does not make that breakaway stop against the Vegas Golden Knights, right? His teammates, his coach agreed afterwards. That was the turning point in what was at that point a tie game. That, you know, that was probably the biggest difference between the two teams, was that sequence that started with a breakaway save on Ivan Barbashev. And so then to carry that forward into Saturday and to make 36 saves against the Montreal Canadiens and just provide that sort of calm and stability that we've seen so much with the Calgary Wranglers. I think that's the biggest thing that has struck me in the past two games with Dustin Wolf at this level, is you can see that calm. You can see that composure. You can see the reads that everybody raves about. I mean, the one goal the other night that Cole Caulfield scored was an absolutely perfect shot. And if it wasn't, Dustin Wolf had it because he read that two-on-one perfectly.
And he almost got it, too.
He was a fraction of an inch from kicking that thing out. And so, you know, at that point, you just sort of tip your cap to a really good goal scorer in Caulfield. But Dustin Wolf has been on he's found a little bit of a groove here this week for the Calgary Flames, and he should be between the pipes tonight. I think we could be having a conversation, even if Jacob Markstrom was ready tonight, and he's not, that Dustin Wolf had earned another opportunity.
Going to get to Jacob in a second, but let's continue on the Dustin story, because what we're seeing from him, you know, you've watched him a lot in the American League. I've had an opportunity to watch him in the American League. And what we're seeing from him in these last two starts is the type of goaltending we've seen from him at every other level, at the Western Hockey League level, at the American Hockey League level. And let's not forget that the AHL time didn't start great for him. Remember his first AHL start in the weird Stockton Heat in Calgary season?
Were you here?
I was not here for it, but I got the reports of it, and it was dreadful. And he adjusted and went back to Everett and then came back the following year and was the goaltender of the year as a rookie and then followed that up with his MVP season last year.
Can I tell a story about Absolutely. That first start? And I don't remember exactly how many Dustin Wolf gave up in
his six or seven.
First pro start. It was ugly.
Yeah.
And so I was here covering that game, and not so much covering it as just watching that game. And so the communications person for the Calgary, or I guess the Stockton Heat at that point, said, you know, is there anyone that you want to talk to? And I said, well, yeah, I'd really like to talk to Dustin Wolf. I know he just took it on the chin, but, you know, this kid is the story in Calgary these days. And the communications person, just, you know, doing part of their job, which is to protect the players, said, I don't know if we're going to do that today. And I was at the Keg having dinner, and Dustin Wolf had talked to the communications person who had told them, yeah, Wes wanted to talk to you, but we can save that for another day. And he said, no, I'll call him. And that told me so much. And this, all interviews were over the phone at that point. We were still, or Zoom, we were still mid-pandemic. But that told me so much about Dustin Wolf. And his message to me that night was, hey, I've had bad losses before, and I'm going to be fine. I'm not worried about this one. And it was very much the same message as he processed that six-goal shellacking at the hands of the San Jose Sharks a month and change ago. Hey, guys, you know, if you're going to be a goalie, you're going to have some nights where you really take it in the teeth. And I think the way he's rebounded from both of those tough outings, you can learn a lot from.
Well, it takes time sometimes at the NHL level. And, yeah, you know what? The starts this year prior to the last two have been generally meh. There's been some that have been okay where the team in front of them really hasn't helped. But that game against San Jose was ugly. And I think that, right or wrong, I think that it shook the confidence of some Flames fans. Right or wrong, I think some Flames fans were saying to themselves, oh, maybe this size thing is going to be an issue. But I sure did like Kevin Woodley on Thursday of last week, our goalie guru, when he came on and said, that wasn't a size thing. It wasn't because he was small that those goals went in on him. It was because he wasn't doing what makes him a good goalie. He wasn't reading the play. He wasn't anticipating the play. He wasn't comfortable in his stance. He wasn't set. He was scrambly. He was not seeing through traffic very well. All the things that are the opposite of what makes Dustin Wolf such a good goaltender, he didn't have that night against San Jose. And then that's when the size maybe can become a factor, because you can't rely on being 6'6" and maybe being able to get your body in front of things.
Right.
So those things have got to be on for him, and they have been the last two games. This was Martin Pospisil on our postgame show Saturday. Of course, he's played with Dustin for a couple of years in the American League, and now they're both here on the NHL team with the Flames at the same time. And tell you what, he was not surprised to see Dustin, and is not surprised to see Dustin having the success that he's having.
I think it was just a matter of the time that he's going to show in NHL what kind of goalie he is. And I know him for a couple of years. He might be the best goalie I ever met. He's really quick. Even if he's a little smaller goalie, he works hard, and he really competes. And I think the last two games he showed what he can do on the ice.
It's pretty good. That's pretty good endorsement from a teammate.
Yeah,
I mean, the best goalie that I've ever played with, and that's because he's played with him for a couple of years. I don't think that was any shade intended on any other goalie he's played with, but just goes to show that he knows Dustin really well. He's played with him for a couple of years. He sees how well he prepares. You know, I've seen him go through his pregame routine, just like snippets of it. I even see him go through his morning skate routine. It is always the same. It is meticulous. It is as deliberate as I've ever seen a goalie get themselves ready.
Yeah.
It is something else. Like when he does the cutbacks, he does it like four times at center ice, back and forth, back and forth. Doesn't matter if he's starting or if he's backing up, just back and forth. He's holy.
Yeah.
And off the ice, like he's here we are as we're talking live, it's 4:11 p.m. He's probably already here. He's probably been here for 45 minutes or longer. He does the warms up ball against the wall, and like he is as meticulous as they come when it comes to his preparation. And so Pospisil would have seen that, and other guys on this Flames team is now seeing that, and now they're seeing how it translates on the ice. And hey, this guy can be a good goaltender. So far, small sample size, but he can be, in a two-game sample size anyway, be a really good, clearly NHL quality goalie.
And I think what Martin Pospisil was talking about, or what, you know, Jacob Pelche or Connor Zeri might tell you, I think that's now what Blake Coleman and Michael Backlund and Jonathan Huberdeau are seeing, maybe for the first time. You know, these past two starts have been, for me, the best indication of what Dustin Wolf can provide at this level. That it's been, for me, the most, you know, you can kind of throw out, and it was such a great story at the time, but you can throw out that last game of the regular season in terms of, this is last year, in terms of a true sort of indicator because of the caliber of competition and just the fact there were no stakes and on. But for me, these past two have been the most proper indication of what Dustin Wolf in the sort of groove he's used to being in is capable of at this level. And listen, size, there's going to be times where the size costs some goals. You're going to see Alex Ovechkin go high glove every time, I bet, he has the puck tonight. You know, guys want to test that size. It's going to be tough to track pucks through those tree trunks of bodies in front of them at times, right? There's going to be goals that are because of Dustin Wolf's size, just like, you know, there's going to be goals scored on 6'7" goalies that are because of their lack of agility or their lack of quickness.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I just think what we've seen from Dustin Wolf, and not to make a mountain out of something that's perhaps not, but I think what we've seen in his past 120 minutes of NHL action is a really good indication of what I believe he's capable of at this level.
As do I. And I know that, and I said this on the postgame show Saturday with Derek and Megan, and you know, nothing has changed for me in terms of my view on Dustin Wolf. It remains the same now as it did prior to these last two games, as it was before and after the ugly San Jose game. My view is we're talking about an elite goaltending prospect, the best goaltending prospect the Flames have had in decades, and a guy that deserves a long runway to prove definitively that he can or cannot cut it regularly at this level as a starting goalie. And that doesn't mean just this season. That doesn't mean next season. Mm-hmm. Like, for a 22, soon to be 23-year-old goaltender, like, we're talking about years in terms of how long that runway should be and how much time and space they should give him to definitively tell them. You know, because he could finish this year really strong, and then next year he could struggle. But that doesn't mean the year after he won't. Like, it takes time for young goalies to become what they are. And if they're going to be a high-end NHL goalie or a regular starting goalie in the league, it takes time. More often than not, it takes years for that to be determined. So I just think it would be a little I just think the Flames would be doing themselves a disservice if they didn't give him that runway and weren't deliberate about making room for him so he can hop in and roll down that runway. Like, I we'll get to the rest of the season in just a second, but they've got to have a spot for him next year. I know that for you, you've been there for 6 months already. They in Wes Gilbertson's mind, they should have had a spot for him in September or October. It didn't happen. But now I'm at the point, even though he is still waiver exempt next year,
yeah,
that can't be a factor. He needs to be a full-time NHLer next year. Or at the very least, that option has to be there so that he can prove it and earn a spot out of camp, and there's nothing blocking him from doing that.
Yeah, I think it was a real shame if that wasn't the case. You know, I do think there's a legitimate chance that the Calder Cup playoffs this season will be the last that Dustin Wolf sees of the American Hockey League. And what he's done up to this point, I think, makes the case for that. Now, no one was arguing when Dustin Wolf, after giving up six to the San Jose Sharks, got sent back down to the minors. And so, you know, if there's another tough stretch and he needs to get his game sorted out in the AHL while he remains waiver exempt, you have that option. You know, I've been of the opinion, I think, for a while, and it's not changed any, that I don't really know what's left for Dustin Wolf with the Wranglers. And if you're going through a retooling process, you know, remember, Dustin Wolf has not earned back-to-back victories behind a veteran-laden defense. This is a group that is in transition, as we keep talking about, and Dustin Wolf needs to be a huge part of that. And I just don't know that it makes any sense to not have him around.
Yep. I'm completely with you on that front. So that's next season. But what about the 15 games before we get to the end of the regular season here? How do the Flames go about handling that? And that is really interesting to me because, as head coach Ryan Huska told us on Monday morning, again, the Flames don't play after this Monday night game against Washington. Don't play again until Saturday in Vancouver for their first trip against or a road game against the Canucks this year. And there's a really good chance that Markstrom could be between the pipes against his former team come Saturday. This was head coach Ryan Huska on Markstrom's status on Monday morning.
Skating today, and we're expecting him to skate three more times this week coming up, so hopefully everything keeps progressing the right way and he's in our net on the weekend.
So that could be Saturday or Sunday. Flames play Saturday in Vancouver, then come back home to play Buffalo on Sunday on the rare road home back-to-back that haven't seen here in 4 or 5 years. But that would put to rest any of the outside scuttlebutt, head-scratching scuttlebutt that Jacob wasn't going to play again this year.
Yeah, wherever that came from, it was a reach.
Yeah, so he's going to return this weekend if all things go according to plan, but does that mean they're sending Dustin Wolf automatically down to the American League? I don't know. I don't know if it does or should. I don't know. This is the first time that first time all season that I can sit here and tell you that I think there's a really good argument to be made about carrying three goaltenders until the end of the regular season.
Yeah, and, you know, Joni Ortio and Jonas Hiller and Kari Ramo, turn down your radios for a second because you're not going to like to hear us make the case for the vaunted three-goalie system, but I'm with you. And maybe you can base it a little bit on tonight. I just, as I said, I don't know what Dustin Wolf has to gain from going and spending another few weeks of regular season action in the American Hockey League. And further to that, and again, maybe it could change tonight, but further to that, I believe right now Dustin Wolf, even once Jacob Markstrom is healthy, is your second best goaltender. Dan Vladar got absolutely hung out to dry in his last two starts. And yet, Dustin Wolf has, for me, with his past two wins, sort of climbed past Dan right now on what can be an easily shiftable depth chart. I believe he's the second best goalie right now that you have. And I don't want that guy, if it's up to me, with the farm team. Yep. I want him around Jacob Markstrom. I want him around NHL shooters. We talk about, well, what's the trouble of his undersized frame? Well, it's learning how to stop shots that come from guys who can routinely go bar down, the best shooters in the world. Where is he going to get practice at that?
In the NHL.
In the NHL.
Yep.
Right? We talk about learning from Jacob Markstrom, a guy who has his own routine dialed, who is as competitive as they come. Well, where is he going to do that?
Probably also in the NHL.
Yeah, and so this probably is going to stink for Dan Vladar if suddenly he becomes the third wheel for the next 5 weeks, but if Dustin Wolf is still number two on your depth chart, even with Jacob Markstrom healthy, I want him in the NHL, and I think he's shown... And I'll be fascinated to hear what you think, but I think he's shown he should be here.
Oh, I am fully there. I just, first of all, there's no 23-man roster anymore. So the roster limit is gone, and the Flames have oodles of cap space. So essentially, and this can be confusing, so I'm not trying to pat-splain here when I say this.
That's a great term, by the way, pat-splain.
That just came to me right now. But I had to have this pike explained to me a number of years ago, so then I remembered. But trade debt, so there is a 23-man roster and a salary cap that you have to be beholden to from the start of the regular season until the trade deadline. Once the trade deadline hits, the salary cap is still in place, but the 23-man roster disappears. You can carry as many players on your roster as you want after the trade deadline, as long as your salary cap compliant, and then come the playoffs, the salary cap disappears as well, so you can carry everybody if you want. You can charter two planes if you want to playoff games, however you want to go about it. So it goes cap and roster limit, and then after the deadline, just the cap, and then after the regular season, neither. So right now they don't have to be – there's no worry. Carrying three goalies doesn't mean that you can't carry 8D or right now they're carrying 15 forwards, 8D and three goalies.
Yeah.
So they've got the lots of extra bodies around right now. So that's number one, is that they're already carrying lots of extra bodies. And then the rest of the points that you make, I'm totally with you, because by keeping them up, yeah, maybe at times he has to... First of all, Markstrom isn't practicing very much. That's another point that I think is really important. Even when Jacob is ready to return, how often do we see Jacob take a morning skate? How many times do we see Jacob do a full practice? And if he does very, very limited work and then pieces. So you then have two nets for Vladar and Wolf to get into. So there's going to be lots of work for both guys, lots of practice time for both guys, and it just gives you ease of getting him into games.
Yeah.
And you know what? Vladar's going to get starts as well. There's 15 to go. You're not going to go – I don't think we're talking about 12 of the next 15 going to Markstrom. And I know that there's still playoff mathematical life, but right now they've got some other things that are important as well, including managing Jacob's health and managing the lower body injury that he's clearly been dealing with for months now. I think keeping three goaltenders around – with only a month left to go on the regular season, actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I just think, and we started this conversation this way, yes, there are some playoff probabilities or playoff, they're a long shot still to get into the playoffs, but it's not, you know, it's not a complete snowball's chance in you know where yet. They do have a mathematical opportunity to do that. But keeping Dustin Wolf on your roster doesn't get you further away from that goal. I think that's the important thing. This isn't like, hey, let's give the young guy some time, even though we don't think he's ready. He's showing you. He's showed you in his last two starts that he's ready.
Yeah.
That he's as ready to help this team as Dan Vladar is. And again, this isn't going up one side and down the other of Dan Vladar. It's just he's been outplayed by Dustin Wolf. And so that's your number two guy right now. And if you're going to – he's been on the yo-yo all year, and there's been times that it's been understandable. But if you're going to watch these past couple starts from Dustin Wolf, and I would say this even louder if he backs it up tonight against the Washington Capitals and either wins a third in a row or gives you another really strong performance, I just don't know what message it sends or what good it does to send him back to the minors after that.
Let's get to the text line at 960.
Any opinions on there?
There's been a few. Let's start with Ray in Calgary, who says, in my opinion, if the Flames are eliminated from playoff contention, send Wolf back to the Wranglers so he can get a few games in with them and then be a big part of their playoff run. I believe both Markstrom and Vladar should finish the season playing. And I don't even mind that. Like, if you were to send Wolf back, let's see, the Flames' last game is April 18th. And it's a home game against San Jose. I mean, actually, maybe you do play him against San Jose to see if he can avenge what happened the last time.
I think they're in San Jose before that, aren't they?
Yes, they've got a game in San Jose on April 9th and then at home to San Jose 9 days later to wrap up the regular season. He is, to your point, going to be a big part of the Wranglers' playoff success.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you know, that's something that whether the Flames make the playoffs or not, Dustin Wolf's going to be playing playoff hockey this
year.
So that is one thing that you can bank on.
Yeah. He's a goalie, though. And what I mean by that is, you know, you don't need necessarily, as the Wranglers get closer to the playoffs, you want your five guys on the power play working on the power play. Right? You want your penalty kill units with the Wranglers working together. I don't think there's anything that Dustin Wolf is going to be missing that he can't jump right back into the Wranglers lineup. That's the way I feel.
Yeah, I
agree.
Now,
if something takes a drastic turn for this Flames team and, you know, they're really playing out the string and you want to get your goalie back in games that matter more, then sure, but for a while, that's not happening.
This reads, would Wolf become a regular recall instead of an emergency recall when Markstrom's healthy? Would they use up one of their two remaining recalls to keep Wolf to have three goalies? I would. Yes, if they, when Markstrom returns and is healthy, Wolf would have to be converted to a regular recall. He's currently on an emergency recall because Markstrom isn't able to go. But like that texter, I'd be perfectly fine with them converting him to recall number three.
Mm-hmm.
and having only one regular recall left. Again, as you get into the month of April, the NHL is very when it comes to what constitutes as an emergency recall. Stubbed his toe? Can't go? Yeah, that's fine. You can do an emergency recall.
They really need to change that rule anyways. The paper recalls on deadline day should not count towards your four.
I know.
It's absolutely
very silly.
Ridiculous.
What else we got here from Heath? Fellas, I firmly believe Wolf would have been doing this much earlier in the season if the Flames would have gotten the rack together and made space for him sooner. Now, because they didn't do that, they're in a tough spot where they risk damaging the relationship even more if they have to send him down yet again because they're too worried about losing an easily replaceable Vladar if they put him on waivers. The Flames didn't see this coming sooner is mind-boggling. That comes from Heath. I don't know if they didn't see it coming sooner, and I also don't know if he is going to go down in the near future here. It might be Oscar Danskin and Connor Murphy in the American League for a little while here.
Yeah, I really think it will be, and I just want to push back on one part of that text. When you say damage the relationship even more, there's nothing that I have heard or overheard or anything like that this season leads me to believe there's a fractured relationship here. I think Dustin Wolf believes he's ready to be an NHLer, but I don't think there's a real strain happening here.
This reads, not sure he's better than Vladar right now. Way too small a sample size. Way too small. And as of the last two games, he has been better than Dan Vladar right now. Right now, Dustin Wolf is the guy who should be starting. Right now, in a situation where your number one isn't healthy, it's a what have you done for me lately situation, and lately Dustin Wolf's been the guy who should be earning starts.
That's what I believe, and again, I'm not trying to, you know, chuck Dan Vladar out the back door or anything, but he's been shelled in his past too, and look what we've seen out of Dustin Wolf. Now, yes, Dan Vladar got hung out to dry in those games, but you know, if you want to take your two sort of potential goalies of the future and go win and you're in, I don't think that's a bad idea.
Brett in Calgary says, I agree with you. Keep three goalies for the rest of the season in case Jacob isn't healthy enough to play. This reads, Hellebuck was 25 years old before he was a starter. Markstrom, 26. It's so rare to see a goalie be an impactful starter at Wolf's age. He may not be a Vasilevsky or Price, being a Vezina candidate in his early 20s, and that's just fine. We don't need him to be. We need him to be a Hellebuck when the team is competitive again in 3 years. This reads, love Wes's point about Dustin's size. For as many goals that go by him because he's not 6'6", he'll make up for it with his agility and wolf-like shiftiness. This reads, yes, the runway is long for young goalies, and Dustin's only 22. However, he's maxed out on size, and that'll be his biggest challenge in the long run, as talented as he is, and he is talented. This reads, Wolf is too small for the NHL. This reads, how tall was Kiprusoff? He was not the tallest man either.
6'1".
And finally, this says, it's honestly shocking that Wolf fell all the way down to number 214 in his draft year. The league should have been more apt to draft a diminutive goaltender after watching UC Saros succeed. That's the text line at 960-960. As Dustin Wolf is the guy for now, he'll make his third straight start against Washington on Monday night. That's our look inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. Flames fans, meet Cal and Gary. Top products curated for Calgarians, and we mean every single one of you. Only available at Calgary Co-op. Visit them today.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
For a Monday edition of your Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly cleaned car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish. Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson of Post Media, and now Derek Wills, the voice of the Calgary Flames, joins us here on the Hot Stove Lounge for a live edition of our Daily Flames Roundtable. Gents, one thing that just has not worked very well since the beginning of last season, since both these players got to Calgary, is a combination at 5-on-5 of Nazem Kadri and Jonathan Huberdeau. It just, at no point has it really clicked for a long period of time. Now, a long period of time, maybe not yet, but last couple of games since they've been put together, it's looked a little bit different. There's been a little chemistry there. There's been a little dynamicism there, if that's a word.
That's Megan's word.
Dynamicism?
Yes.
Okay, so then it is a word. If Megan uses it, then I can too.
Yeah, she's smart.
Are the circumstances finally right for Huberdeau and Kadri to work well on a 5-on-5 line with one another?
Maybe. I mean, small sample size, so I don't want to jump to any conclusions because, quite frankly, it didn't work for quite some time. But I asked Ryan Huska about it this morning when we were chatting with the Flames head coach, and I asked him if Martin Pospisil has unlocked that combination of Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri because, in my opinion, they've played their best hockey together with him on the right side of that line. And to paraphrase, he basically said there could be something to that because Jonathan Huberdeau needs a guy like Martin Pospisil who pushes the pace and opens up some ice for him. But he also said that Nazem Kadri didn't play his best hockey in the second half of last season. You know, Jonathan Huberdeau didn't play his best hockey for all of last season and for a good chunk, I would say probably the first half of this season. So that would also explain why that combination maybe didn't work before and is working now. It does make some sense. The only thing I wonder about is that Huberdeau and Kadri both like to hold the puck. So I do wonder if it's going to be a long-term fit, and I also wonder if when Connor Zeri is ready to return, if they put the Kadri and the kids line back together.
Yeah, and that's probably the rub for me is when Connor Zeri is ready to return, and I think he's really darn close. I'd probably want him back with Nazem Kadri and Martin Pospisil.
Yeah.
You know, here's the great thing for me, guys, about Jonathan Huberdeau right now is because of the way he's playing and the confidence that he's found basically dating back to New Year's Eve, he's been able to spark some chemistry with whoever he's playing with, mm-hmm. right? He's made some great passes to Andrei Kuzmenko. He's shown some chemistry with Yegor Sharangovich. And we certainly sat around this same roundish table last season and talked about, well, who can get Jonathan Huberdeau going? Who's the right fit for Jonathan Huberdeau? And I think the great thing for the Flames is whether it's Nazem Kadri or someone else, we're not talking about getting Jonathan Huberdeau going. We're just talking about someone who can bank in those great passes that he's been making. I mean, those two the other night, any of us, no disrespect to Nazem Kadri or Martin Pospisil, but any of us could have finished those two plays off.
Yep.
That's how good those two passes were. And so I've liked what we've seen more so than what we'd seen in the past out of Kadri and Huberdeau. But I think my vote, if we're putting it that way, is to put Connor Zeri back in that spot because we know it works and it's been such a nice fit and it's been a line that you can count on to really drive. And then put Jonathan Huberdeau with whoever because that's the way he's playing. He can take advantage of playing with whoever he's with right now.
Yeah, and I put him back with Yegor Sharangovich.
Yeah.
Those two guys definitely have a connection.
See, I'm a little torn because So let's say because Zeri's not going to return Monday against Washington. So let's say Zeri's back on Saturday against Vancouver, which I think we all agree is a pretty decent possibility. We know that Zeri, Kadri, Pospisil works. We know that. By the time they play against the Canucks on Saturday, there'll be 14 games remaining. They'll be at best six out of a playoff spot, and with a long stretch of games between, they could be more. Who knows? I don't know. I wonder if they look good again against Washington, because they're going to go with Huberdeau, Kadri, and Pospisil again. Do you, if it looks good again, do you keep that together for a little bit? And do you see if it can continue to build? I think Zeri would be a nice fit if you put him with Sharangovich and Kuzmenko right now. I think that would be, and the way that that line's getting used, they're routinely seeing like 75-80% offensive zone starts, really plays to Zeri's strengths. And if those things work, then great. You found some new combinations, and maybe you go like that for a little bit. If it's like, nope, the Zeri thing, no. You can, after a period or two periods, you can easily put Zeri back with Kadri and flip Huberdeau back to Sharangovich because we know that both work.
Right.
And so for me, I'm like, going forward, Huberdeau and Kadri are going to be the two highest-paid players on the team. And so knowing that, is it worth it to try to see if you can make it work longer term? Because something the thing that really stuck out to me when Ryan Huska was standing right there talking to us, Wilsey, was you asked him about Pospisil, and then it really hit home when he said, you know what, for the first time ever in a Flames uniform, both guys are going. Kadri's been going all year, and finally since, you know, January, Huberdeau's been going too. So maybe with both going, maybe there is something to giving him a little bit more runway. So that's kind of, I'm kind of like, you can always go back to those other combinations.
That's fair.
But just long term, would it be worth it to let those guys go a little bit longer?
Well, and it might depend on what happens tonight. If those two guys have another good game together, I think what you said makes some sense, Pat. Leave them together, and if things aren't going your way against the Canucks, you can always switch your lines back to what they were before the injury to Zeri, and hopefully that sparks your team. The other thing that I'd like to see, if we get to a point where the Flames are, not necessarily mathematically, but even more realistically eliminated from the playoffs, I'd like to see Connor Zeri at center. Give him a little taste. I know they tried it for, two periods? Didn't look very good. But, I mean, he's a rookie. He's still trying to find his way in this league. He's been really effective on left wing. So the timing wasn't right the last time. And Ryan Huska, to his credit, who I think has done a great job, you know, getting a feel for how guys are going in games and making changes if he feels they're necessary, he quickly switched away from that. But the Flames, I think, have to add a centerman, or they've got to find a centerman. Maybe they've got one in Connor Zeri. So I'd like to see a little bit more of Zeri playing at center between now and the end of the season if the Flames are in a spot where they feel like that makes some sense.
Yeah, I mean, if you get into sort of experimental mode, I think you want to take a look at both Connor Zeri and Martin Pospisil at center. You know, one of the reasons that Connor Zary was moved to the wing in the first place is because his pace wasn't necessarily good enough at the American Hockey League level to do the things that they wanted him to do as a center. Now, credit to Connor, he's worked his tail off on his pace. I think it's a whole lot better than it used to be, and now can it work as a center? You know, he's riding a wave of confidence throughout this rookie season. Give it a try. Can Martin Pospisil, you know, play his same you-know-what disturber style as a center, which was his natural position when he started?
I don't think he can.
And maybe he can't. And I'm not sure that Connor Zary can dictate the play the way he can from the wing at center either. But that
we don't know.
But those
are
the experiments you try, right? Just like I was going to say to Pat's point, you know, when you talk about, well, okay, we know Zary and Kadri can work. Well, let's try some different things. Well, I'd love to see Jonathan Huberdeau with Matt Coronato, who's as confident in himself at this level as he's ever been. Like if we get into experimental mode, absolutely, try all these things. Because you're right, we know Zary works on the wing. We know the Kadri-Zary-Pospisil combination can be a keeper for this team. It's worth throwing some things against the wall.
Yeah.
The Calgary Flames just aren't there yet.
Yep. Daily Flames Roundtable, Derek West and Pat on this Monday Flames Talk. And now to a gentleman that's a little bit more of an unknown quantity. So for a guy with very limited NHL experience, the Flames sure are giving Daniil Miramanov a lot of ice time, aren't they? Like, Willsie, they gave him almost 24. I think it was 23.50 is what he played against.
22.50,
sorry.
Yeah.
So he played 22.50 against Montreal on Saturday. So almost 23 minutes for Miramanov, a guy that we didn't know much about when they acquired him in the Hanifin trade, and he's been plopped right into a high-leverage role. I don't think he's played anything less than 18.50 in a game since he joined the Flames. They are, Willsie, they're not messing around with this guy's ice time, are they?
They're not, and I think he's earned it. He's got more than 20 minutes in three of the five games he's played in. The fewest he's played is 18:59, and a career-high 22:52 in that victory over the Habs on Saturday. And he has scored in two of the last three games. He only had two goals in his first 31 career NHL games, and now he's got two in his last three. He is looking like a player who's getting more comfortable and more confident, and there is certainly something there. And now I know why the Flames were so excited to acquire this guy, because I think he's a diamond in the rough, a guy who at the age of 17 switched positions going from forward to defense, a really intelligent guy. I don't know how much time you guys have spent with him, but Megan spent like half an hour with him last week.
Yeah.
I talked to him on the air for 5 or 6 minutes and probably spent another 5 minutes with him chatting off the air. And a guy who's a real student of the game and is, I think, a pretty high-end prospect. And I call him a prospect despite the fact that he's 26, simply because he hasn't spent a ton of time at the NHL level and is a guy who missed more than half of last season and more than half of this season due to injury. So he's got a lot of tread on his tires still. So he's a really intriguing player for me. And the Flames are looking for a guy who can play top four, looking for a guy who can quarterback their power play, and he has checked all those boxes, and again, it's a small sample size of five games, but so far so good, and it looks like this guy's got a pretty high ceiling, which is something we never saw because the Golden Knights never really gave him a chance to show anybody that.
Yeah, and then listen, the Golden Knights are stacked on the blue line, and so perhaps understandable that Daniil Miramanov couldn't get that opportunity, but you know, the thing that strikes me when I sit and chat with him is the level of confidence. Like, I can't think of too many 26-year-olds who've played 30-some NHL games who talk about becoming one of the best defensemen in the National Hockey League. And not just talk about how they want to be that, how they believe they can be that. And you absolutely love that sort of confidence when you hear it from Miramanov. And then when you watch him spin around out there, you can see it. Mm-hmm. Like, he's got poise that goes far beyond his experience. He has a ton of offensive upside. He might be the best fit we've seen as a power play quarterback so far, and we know that's been a rotating door for this Flames team. And I really like what he's done with the added opportunity. I do think he's been probably a more natural fit just because of the miles he can log and the skills that he brings. He crosses me as a more natural fit for top 4 minutes than a Braden Pahal did. Braden Pahal, to me, fits the mold of a third-pairing guy.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing that's really – because I'm with you on the power play. I've been really impressed, and I think that that's been a really nice fit, and I'd like to see how that can continue to develop. And I'm curious to see, as guys like Huberdeau and Kadri get a little bit more comfortable with him at the top of that number one power play, how often they start deferring to him, because he has got a cannon, and he's not afraid to use it. And now – Mackenzie Weegar's is not afraid to get shots on net or towards the net either, but maybe doesn't have the same type of cannon that Miramanov does. So, you know, I'm curious if they start to trust that a little bit more and they start to let him pound that thing. So there's that. And the other thing that has been really impressive is the minutes and like the leverage. Like, he's playing with Weegar and has been for a little bit here, last few games. And they've been playing against really good players. Like, they've been matched up against solid opposition. So they saw the Suzuki line for most of the Montreal game. They saw the Eichel line for most of the Vegas game. So they're going out there. And a guy that was supposed to be offense first and supposed to kind of be more one-dimensional, they've been putting him out there in kind of shutdown head-to-head minutes. And he's done fine with them planning a pairing with Weegar, which has been interesting as well.
Yeah, Weegar doesn't have a hard shot, but he knows how to use it, and that's why he
gets it through so well.
Tied for third in the NHL in goals by defensemen with a career-high 15 this season. I'm not sure who has a harder shot, Rasmus Anderson or Daniil Miramanov, but I'll tell you who's got a better shot, at least right now. It's Miramanov, because he uses it. Anderson doesn't use it.
Yeah.
So he's been a lot of fun to watch, and I can't wait to see where he goes from here, because I think the more experience he gets playing defense, the better he's going to get. You can tell that he's got some instincts from when he used to be a forward and isn't afraid to get involved offensively. And defensively, he's been solid. Like, that's kind of their new shutdown pairing, as you just talked about. But let me ask you guys this question, and I hope I don't regret it. Maybe I should ask you off the air, but it's too late. Has there been a huge drop-off from Noah Hanifin to Daniil Miramanov? There's been a drop-off. I just don't know how big it's been, to be quite honest.
Yeah, there's been a drop-off for sure, but I don't think it's been huge, and that's a credit to Miramanov.
Yeah, 100%.
Now, you know, let's be fair to Noah Hanifin and his poise and experience. If you had to win one game and you were choosing between the two, you're taking Noah Hanifin. But we sat here and wondered who could fill a top-four role, and in a very limited sample size so far, Miramanov's made a pretty good case that he might be ready for that.
He kind of looks like a younger Noah Hanifin to me, just some very similar skills, some similar tools in that toolbox. And again, I'm not saying that he's Noah Hanifin right now, and maybe he never will be, but Hanifin's got, what, 700-800 games in this league?
Yeah, 650-something.
Yeah, Miramanov's, he's really inexperienced for a 26-year-old, so... anxious to see where this goes from here. Again, I look at him as a bit of a diamond in the rough, and he's getting an opportunity with the Flames that he never got with the Golden Knights, and so far he's made the most of it.
He would technically be younger than Noah Hanifin, but only by about 6 months.
Yeah.
They're both 97s.
Let me add something really quick, because I think this goes to your point about him being a former forward. This is a guy who grew up in Moscow wanting to score goals like Alex Ovechkin. Ovechkin and Kovalchuk were his favorite players as a kid. And so I think that's neat, too. I'm excited to see the poise, if it's still there tonight, because he's going to be pinching himself between shifts going up against Ovechkin. He's admitted as much. And I think it'll be an interesting test for a guy who hasn't showed a lot of nerve so far.
I don't know who is a bigger Alexander Ovechkin fan, Daniil Miramanov or A.J. Greer.
Oh, yeah?
I knew Greer was an Ovechkin fan, but I did my one-on-one with him. We're going to hear that in our Flames Talk pregame show tonight. And he went on about Ovi for like 5 minutes.
Wow.
Just gushing about how he loves him as a player and so appreciates what he's done for the game with his big personality. Unbelievable answer. A.J. Greer is a great interview.
Yeah.
But his answer on Alexander Ovechkin and why he has idolized him and how excited he is to play against him. It was awesome.
I really wanted to answer Willsey's question about have they have
go for it.
Oh,
go
I'm
for
sorry,
it.
Pat.
We got three seconds. I do think that they miss the pairing.
The pairing, yes.
The top four looks it just a little too scrambly, a little bit too much time in their own zone overall. So they miss Hanifin that way, and the top four misses Hanifin and Tanev a lot still. But Miramanov still has come in and done a nice job.
Yeah, but it's a bit like comparing apples to oranges. What if you were to put Daniil Miramanov in a pairing with Chris Tanev? For sure they missed the pairing. I mean, maybe the best shutdown pairing in the league this season, certainly one of them. But I guess I was just trying to give some kudos to Miramanov.
He's been good.
Because I thought that Hanifin's departure would leave a bigger hole. It's left a hole, but not as big as I thought.
And kudos, too. I thought that was a pretty insightful answer from Pat. We should let him talk a little more tomorrow.
No. Nobody, people hear me talk enough.
I'm trying to give him a chance to rest his voice. It's almost back to 100%.
He's Derek. Thank you. He's Derek. He's Wes. I'm Pat. That's your Daily Flames Roundtable. That'll start to wrap us up this hour as well. Thanks to Connor and Taylor back downtown producing up this hour. Actually, that's a lie. This hour is going to continue, so just forget I said that. I forgot we're doing a long hour. We still have a big future of the Flames conversation to get to in a couple of minutes. So instead of putting my foot in my mouth, I'll just say that's your Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, time to take a look at the future of the Flames, brought to you by Oncolytics Biotech. Fighting cancer by unleashing the power of the immune system. To learn more about how an idea originating in Calgary inspired hope for many, visit OncolyticsBiotech.com. It's Pat Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson along with you on your Flames Talk Hour on this Monday, and very happy to welcome in the newest member of the Calgary Flames organization. He signed a contract out of Minnesota State University earlier on this Monday, and Sam Morton is going to join the Calgary Wranglers on an amateur tryout for the rest of the season, and then a one-year contract kicks in next year with the Flames organization. Sam joins us right now on the program. Sam, appreciate the time today. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
How's today feel? What's the first day being the owner of an NHL contract feel like?
Yeah, it's unbelievable, honestly. Like, it's been a super exciting day. It's been a whirlwind of emotions, just finishing up the season Saturday night, and then, on to the next adventure and onto the next journey today. So it's been pretty crazy. It's been nothing but exciting, and I can't wait to get started.
That journey and that whirlwind must be crazy. Like, you go from a playoff loss at Minnesota State, and then now all of a sudden you're snap of a finger getting ready to make your American League debut probably on Tuesday. How has it been dealing with that whirlwind? I imagine you've never gone through anything quite like this before.
Yeah, it's been crazy. It's been new for sure. I try to stay as level-headed as possible. You know, we talk about it through college hockey and just 3 years of experience, and try not to get too high, try not to get too low. So manage the emotions and enjoy it as much as you can and take in the process. But at the end of the day, like, I just want to keep playing hockey, and I'm excited to do that and help the Calgary Flames organization if I can.
So do you have a chance to say goodbye to teammates and kind of close things out in a somewhat satisfactory manner at college? Do you get much of anything in terms of a wrap up with your teammates?
It's tough. I'm lucky. I was with a great group of guys. They were all with me at the rink today when I signed the contract, and I'm super appreciative of that. Super close group of guys, like I said, and I'll be back with them, I'm sure, at some point this summer. They'll be in town training in Mankato, and I got plenty of things that I'm going to need to grab from Mankato and bring back up.
What was their reaction when they saw you or heard you signing that contract?
Oh, yeah, they were super excited, you know. It's a good reputation for the program to have if they're moving guys on, and just with such a close-knit group of guys, you know, they played a huge part in the process of getting here. No one can do it by themselves, so yeah, I think they feel that a little bit too, and they should be proud of themselves as well.
So what was the process like? Take us through. You finish your season. I know your representative is Dean Grillo. So what is the kind of the process that goes on once your college season comes to an end, and then your agent is getting you set for your first professional deal?
Yeah, it went quicker than I would have imagined, and that's not a bad thing. You know, get to stay in shape and kind of get out of the sadness of ending a season and onto a new journey. So that part of it's kind of nice. But just had a few meetings with some teams Sunday, and, you know, had a really good conversation with some of the staff in Calgary, and thought it was a really good fit and there's opportunity there. So, yeah, conversation went really, really well, and it made the decision easy for me.
Sam Morton is with us, newest member of the Flames organization. Was the opportunity maybe the biggest thing that made you choose Calgary?
Opportunity and fit. Opportunity is a big piece of it, because you want to step in and make an impact and be helpful to the organization, but you also want to fit well within that organization. So, you know, being a two-way responsible and offensive center, I think it fits what they were looking for. So hopefully it's a win-win situation there.
So the fit and the opportunity, tell us a little bit more about the fit and what you see there.
Just depth down the middle. So they're looking for centers that can provide some offense as well as being responsible in all three zones. So just finding the type of center that plays something similar to my game is what they told me they're trying to do. So if it's me that gets the opportunity to fill that role, I couldn't be more excited.
Okay. So how that you kind of answered the question, but that would be how you would describe yourself, hey? Two-way center, responsible in your own zone. Obviously, 24 goals this year. You've got some offense on the other side. What would that be the best way that you would describe yourself as a player, Sam?
Yeah, for sure. I think throughout my college career, I've kind of developed and learned that you got to take care of your own end first and be responsible that way, so that staff and your teammates can trust you. And then beyond that, just try to add more offense and become more dynamic, more downhill, and more of an attack and shooting mentality throughout the years.
We are chatting with Sam Morton. He is the newest member of the Flames organization, signs as a college free agent out of Minnesota State on this Monday. Okay, I'm curious about your journey and the last number of years for you. You were BC, so you're a Colorado guy, right? That's where I know Hockey DB says you're from California. Everywhere else has you from Colorado, but you're a Colorado guy, right?
It's confusing. This is probably my fault, but I was born and raised in California until I was 13, and then my family moved over to Colorado. So California is where I was born, but Colorado is my hometown. So my family lives in Colorado right now.
Okay, so everybody is in Colorado, and that's where most of your minor hockey was, right?
Yeah, correct.
So how did you go from Colorado to BCHL and join that Wenatchee team when it was still in that league? How did you first of all end up in Washington?
You know, to be honest, I just went to an open invitation tryout near my house in Superior. So the Wenatchee Wild had an open invitation tryout that I went to, played well, got invited to their main camp. Played well at the main camp and ended up making the team as a 17-year-old. And so I was fortunate that they gave me a chance, and I was pretty happy that I took up that open invitation tryout.
Yeah, no doubt. And then Union, then COVID hits, then you make your way to Minnesota State. So can you kind of walk us through the college journey that you've walked here the last 5-6 years?
Yeah, my parents are both pretty educated people, and they really wanted me to get a good education, and I also saw the value in that. And, you know, as I was going through the process of finding a college, I was doing a lot of balancing between education and hockey, and I thought Union at the time was a really good fit for that after coming off the 2014 national championship. It's a smaller school. All the classes are kind of discussion-based where you're really just sitting and talking with the professor. So I really liked that aspect of things, and I thought it was a good balance between the two. So I went there for a year. had a decent freshman year. I got injured towards the end of it, didn't play in playoffs, and was ready to come back the following year. Both of the line mates that I planned to play with the next year got injured over the summer. One tore his ACL and the other got shoulder surgery. And so that was a little bit of a shakeup. And then just going into that sophomore season, just wasn't enjoying the game as much as I would want to and didn't feel like it was the right fit for me anymore. So I decided to go back to Wenatchee and just try to find that love for the game and re-explore some options and maybe find a new home that better suited me. And I had a few friends, one being Lucas Souter, and who I played with in Wenatchee, that was at Mankato. And so he had nothing but great things to say about Mankato, and made the decision to change homes and go to Mankato. And it was one of the best decisions of my life, for sure.
That and I would imagine, because that's not 100% like the typical college journey and path to an NHL contract. But I would imagine for you, Sam, it's the path that you'd walk all day, every day. Looking back, you probably would have changed the thing, eh?
Yeah, if it gets me to right here, I'm just happy. So, yeah, I'm not complaining at the moment.
Tell us about playing at Minnesota State and being in that town. It's a hockey town. I've never been, but all I've heard is that it's a hockey town, pure and through and through. What's it like playing at Minnesota State?
It's a blast. The community engagement and involvement within the program is unbelievable. The building is sold out nearly every night. It's electric to play in front of the student section. You know, everyone in the community knows what's going on. The weekend, who we're playing, all sorts of different things like that. So it's an unbelievable place to play, from coaching staff, teammates, community involvement, fans, success, player growth, development. There's just so many great things that come out of Minnesota State.
Okay, couple final ones for you. I got to ask you about a fellow Mankato alum who is a member of the Flames. You spent your first year at Minnesota State with Walker Duehr. He's on the Flames right now. Have you tell us about your relationship with Walker. Have you had a chance to chat with him since signing?
Yeah, I did, actually. I texted him, or he texted me this morning and just said congratulations. I asked if he had any words of wisdom or advice, given that he was in the situation that I'm in now a few years ago. So he was awesome. He just said, be yourself, be confident, don't be too nervous about things, and just be you, and things will work themselves out. So I appreciated that text from him, and it was good to hear from him.
You played with him for 1 year. You know what he's all about. Pretty unsurprised that he has made his way to the highest level.
Yeah, not surprised at all. He's a stud. He was actually my roommate on the road my first year in Minnesota State. So, you know, we were close for that first year, and I've watched his game develop and grow, and he's a stud.
Nice. Okay, last question for you. You might make your American League debut Tuesday night for the Wranglers. That's a big hop right into the next level. Sam, how ready do you feel to play pro hockey? How ready do you feel to kind of make that next step?
Yeah, you know, I think at this point in the year, it's not often that you can say you're healthy, and my body feels good. I feel healthy, so I think that's one reason to feel ready. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're just preparing for another game, so just going to try to put my best foot forward and take the next however many hours before the game to prepare myself mentally and physically and be in the best spot that I can.
Well, Sam, congratulations on your first NHL contract. That's awesome to see. Welcome to the Flames organization. Travel safe to Calgary, and we'll see you here soon, hey?
All right. Thank you very much.
Have yourself a great day. That is Sam Morton, the newest member of the Flames organization, as he signs a contract that kicks in next year. He'll be on an ATO with the Wranglers for the rest of the season as we continue along on Flames Talk. Sam Morton signing on Monday afternoon. It's a Pat and Wes, the future of the Flames, little doubleheader. We go from Sam Morton and now the guy who's going to be coaching him starting on Tuesday. It's time for our regular Monday chat with Wranglers head coach coach Trent Cull. Trent, appreciate the time as always. Great to chat with you. Little reinforcement in another guy who can play down the middle for you. That's got to be nice to bring in some more skills, some more scoring in a guy like Sam Morton. Hey.
Yeah, Pat, I should have asked you a couple lines of questions there so you could, you know, done some more work for me and talked to him, you know, Sam, about where he fits in the power play, what he likes. And no, that's good. It is. You know what? It's the time of the year where we've had, a lot of people gone through, and sometimes we've been really short. And so it's always great to have a guy who's had a great season leaving. College on a high, I would say, right? He's feeling probably pretty good about his game where he's at, and it's a good time for us to kind of get him in here with all the call-offs and guys still up and get a shot at him, get a look at him.
What's going to be key in kind of allowing him to succeed? Like, he's jumping into a brand new team and you guys are right in the middle of a stretch drive. From a coaching standpoint, what's going to be key in getting him up to speed, but also putting him in a spot where he has a chance to be successful?
Well, I think that's where I think I have to watch a little bit of that and see how it goes for him. I know he's natural at center, so I'm going to try to get him in at that spot to start with our team. And then I think it's too, it's everybody fits into the puzzle a little bit differently, right? So, how can we, I guess, utilize his talents? Like, he's a guy who's been scoring some goals and he's feeling good about his shot, feeling good about his offense. So how can we get him in here and maybe provide a little spark for us? And so I think that's what we'll make sure we're not going to try to overload him, but also make sure that we try to use him as best we can, because, you know what, we need some offense right now, just being honest with you. Like, our Achilles right now as a team is we're having a tough time creating. And so if a guy can come in and spark something and help us out, then that's awesome.
I'm curious, because we've talked a lot about the how much of a challenge it can be sometimes for the group to generate offense. Even coming off the weekend and two really close games against Colorado, Trent, how important are your leaders in kind of helping in that transition to being a team that's, you know, really focused on details and making sure that you're prepared to win 1-0, 2-1 games on a regular basis? Like, from your captain on down, how important are they in kind of transitioning to the team to that brand of hockey?
Yeah, you know what, just you're almost in the room with us here about 4 days ago we're in Colorado, and I just said, you know, like, what do we do well? Like, what were we doing well at the start of the year? And it's not like anybody says scoring is that. That's when your captain steps up and he says, like, we grind. You know, that's kind of the Wrangler way, and that's it, right? And that's how our mindset's got to be. I think we were saying this last week. We got to win games 1-0, and that's what we got to get that in our head, and that's how we're successful. And you know, of course, we'd love to win 5-0, right? But I think when we get out there and we know that, like, just being, and I don't want to say safe or solid, but just solid every shift, and we don't have to, like, press for, you know, something or force anything. We just keep grinding away, and we've always said, you know, we've got good goaltending, we've got good defense. And different times throughout the year, we've been able to, you know, provide offense. But right now, it's a little bit dry for us right now. And so we just got to keep finding a way. Like, it's pretty amazing that, you know, I guess I'm not sure if I should be saying that or not, but, like, we scored 2 goals this weekend, but we won a hockey game. You know what I mean? Which is pretty, I think it's pretty awesome. You know, out of 2 games, you score 2 goals and you win a hockey game. That's pretty good. So.
We are chatting with Trent Cull, head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. He joins us Mondays on Flames Talk as the Wranglers get set for 2 with Bakersfield this week here at the Scotiabank Saddledome. It's Pat and Wes Gilbertson on this Monday. Wes?
Trent, not to put a positive spin on scoring struggles, as you said, you'd always like to, you know, win them 5-0, but does it make it any easier for a coach to sell the importance of those details and that defensive posture? Like, is it easier to get the buy-in on that part of it when the group maybe collectively isn't doing as much lamplighting as they'd like?
Yeah, I mean, is it easier? I mean, I just think that it's just a kind of our fallback. It's our structure. I mean, it's what we know that if we do this and we do it well, that like it's, you know, I refer to it as it's the coat rack. You come in, you hang your coat on it, you put your hat on it. Like, that's the structure and how we play. And if we all play and do our jobs and, you know, you call the details within it when you go out and you play it and you stick to it, and that's what binds you together, right? That's what brings the group together. We know that that's how we play together. There's certain things on how we break out pucks and how we, you know, put pucks onto a forecheck or how we enter into the zone and all those other things that we hope will lead to more offensive success as well, right? But I think it's good for us. We needed something. We go into Colorado. We played a really good detailed game. And I said, hey, you know what? If we have to go in overtime, we're fine with that. You know, I thought we had a really good overtime. We had really good opportunities in overtime to win the game too. But then, and then it goes to a shootout. Well, we were happy with that too. So, unfortunately, though, like in now day and age, it's really tough to win hockey games when you're only scoring one goal. And our goaltenders did a great job this past weekend. But we're hopefully it's something that we can find a way to not have to rely on every night.
You mentioned obviously the shootout the other night in Colorado. Flames fans who spend some time on social media have undoubtedly seen a replay of William Stromgren's goal in that skills competition. Pretty silky from this perspective. Here's a young man in his first year of AHL hockey, still only 20 years old. How have you seen William sort of progress through this season?
I think he's doing a good job. Like he is always progressing. I'm always pushing him too. But you know what? Like he has good ability, and he's shown that right from the start. But he's using his body better. He's a big kid, and I think he's learning how he can protect pucks. I like how he sees the ice. He's moving pucks well, and he has ability to create, and that's something that that helps our group right now. And he's gotten more ice time because of that. More opportunity for him too. And you know, quietly, something like start of the year, like Will was not good, and like we practice shootouts too, you know, like we haven't practiced much lately, but we had Mackenzie Skafsky had I have the goalie coach do that. He does a presentation to the group on, you know, shootouts and your routes and options and stuff. And so it's really good. And that's something that kind of we stick with throughout the year. And he's grown in that, and he's learned, he's getting an education on it. And I thought that was his best attempt, and it looked really good when he went in the shootout too. And it's nice for us when we're having challenges scoring goals that we can find a way to put three guys out there that we feel real comfortable in that are going to put us over the top too. And Will's part of that.
Trent, I know you got an appointment to get to here really shortly, so I'll ask you two final ones. Number one, just to see Dustin Wolf have the success that he's had the last two starts in the NHL, I would imagine now that you've been with him for a full year, you're kind of like other people who are kind of like, yeah, it was only a matter of time until it was going to pop at the NHL level too.
You know what? I wanted to play him in the worst way, because one thing about Wolfie is if a game doesn't go his way, and this is what I've learned from the guys that have been around him before me, they're like, he's lights out the next night. And you know what? It was a game that we didn't have our best game at home there a week or two ago, you know, and Wolfie hadn't played since. And so to see him go in there and play really well, we were playing the same night, so I didn't get to watch the whole game, but I was happy for him. And so that's good. You know what? I mean, we knew he was going to be good no matter where he was playing that next game. So, and it's great that he helped the Flames win a hockey game. Good for him.
And you got two with Bakersfield Tuesday, Wednesday here at the Dome. Coach, what do you need to be aware of? What do we need to know about the challenge the Condors present for your group as you continue in this tooth and nail playoff fight?
This is containment. This is a really dangerous hockey team. They've got extra veterans on their team. They've got guys like Sam Gagne. You know, Holloway was down there before. They've got Griffith. They've got guys that have been around and know how to play. And Adam Ernie, Kajulia. So they're a team I think is chock full. They're a much more improved team than they were are now than at the start of the year. And so we'll have our hands full. And like the stuff we were talking about before, we're going to have to make sure we're doing a really good job of trying to keep a tight game and keep a lid on them.
We'll let you roll, Coach. Appreciate the time as always. Good luck this week and two against Bakersfield. And we'll do it again next week, hey?
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it, man. You guys take care and enjoy the game tonight.
Thank you, Trent. And, yeah, good luck on Tuesday and Wednesday. He's the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. Trent Cull joining us on the future of the Flames. It's a doubleheader on the future of the Flames. Sam Morton signed on Monday afternoon out of Minnesota State. He'll be playing for Trent on Tuesday, likely against Bakersfield. Really glad the audio fixed itself as well on Trent's phone. I was like, do we drop him? I'm going to ask one more question, hope it corrects itself. I'll give a big fist pump when it did. And then Trent Cull, head coach of the Wranglers, every Monday here on Flames Talk. He joins us on the future of the Flames, brought to you by Oncolytics Biotech, fighting cancer by unleashing the power of the immune system. To learn more about how they intend to empower cancer patients, visit OncolyticsBiotech.com. And this time, we are done for the hour. It was a longer hour than normal, so thanks for hanging out with us this hour on Flames Talk, and thanks to Taylor, thanks to Connor back at Sportsnet 960 World Control, thanks to Wes Gilbertson on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. That'll wrap us up this hour on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.